You're listening to Opus Talks, where you'll be in on conversations with insiders in the energy, chemicals, and environmental commodities markets. Guests share insights into the latest trends and innovations, industry challenges, and much more. Let's dive into the conversations that explore where the energy economy is headed, right here on Opus Talks.
I'm James Stevenson. I run the research group at McCloskey, which is the coal, metals, and mining division. Joining me today is Ranjana von Ventland. How are you doing, Ranjana?
James, I'm good. Thank you. Excited to be with you on this great podcast just before our conference.
Yeah, and that's the topic really of our podcast episode today is we have our Cartagena Coal Conference, which is in Colombia in March. We very much welcome everyone to join. Terrific event. Usually gets, 150, 200 attendees. And it's really broadened. It's no longer just a coal conference. Significantly through the efforts of my colleague Ranjana, we now cover things like coke, anthracite, met coke. So real steel, a real range of commodities coming in there. With that in mind, though, we wanted to have a little bit of a discussion today about issues that are pertinent for Colombia currently. But yeah, we're just going to have a little bit of a chat. We'll probably be about 20, 25 minutes here. And I think we can kick things off. We have a little list of questions.
Yeah, sure, James. Thanks for the wonderful introduction. And the first thing which comes to my mind in the current scenario when we are looking at the market and the industry, especially for Colombia, and this is something which you have looked at very closely in your work. What do you see the repercussions of the Venezuelan situation on the Colombian coal sector and the wider Latin American market?
I think it's really interesting and very, very uncertain is probably how I would summarize things. The first thing to say, of course, many of our audience would know that Venezuela used to be a reasonably sizable coal exporter. They exported up to 8.5 million tons a year. So they ranked kind of sixth or seventh in the world, almost 20 years ago now. But they ran at that level for maybe 5 years until about 2010. And then their exports steadily declined. And now, recent years, they export a few hundred thousand a year. There, sort of ironically, there had already been some efforts to restart two of the two big mines in Venezuela with a Turkish company investing to try to get those back up and running. So, I suppose with what's happened, maybe there are question marks around whether that investment will continue. We think it will. But it's going to take, I don't think it's likely that we suddenly see anywhere near 8.5 million tons a year coming out of Venezuela. I think there's still quite a bit of investment to be done. Probably realistically, you're talking, at least 5 years, assuming that investment continues. And that may be regardless of the situation with the US. So obviously there are restrictions on where that coal could go to. But I'm assuming it would be mostly earmarked for Turkey and it would contribute to global supply. And the last thing I'll say on this, and Ranjana, I'm sure you have comments too, is Venezuelan coal is a bit of a time capsule, right? We've seen every other country have declining coal qualities, whereas because Venezuelan hasn't been mined very much for quite a long time, it's kind of rocket fuel. You're talking like a 6,200 kcal energy content. And there aren't many outside of Northern Appalachia in the US, maybe a bit of Russian. There really aren't many suppliers producing that kind of a high CV. And in the long term, we do see risks of tightness in the high CV market, which used to be a Europe thing. These days, it's more of an industrial coal. But I think if that coal can get to market, it'd probably be quite popular. But there are still a lot of ifs. It's a heavily sanctioned country, etc. Ranjana, did you have
anything to add? Yeah, absolutely, James. I mean, that's a very interesting observation. And most of it we have covered in our publication called as Tariff Talk. So subscribers and readers of our products, they know it very well. From my side, I just want to add is that as far as some of the coke producers are concerned, they had one observation to make. They said that as and when the Venezuelan situation, how it evolves, they are excited about the fact that from Norte de Santander, which is the key coke producing region in the country, the time to truck to Lake Maracaiba is only 6 hours, whereas to the Barranquilla port is 18 hours. So as in things evolve logistically, things could become much easier.
Yeah, I think if it can get off the ground, I think it could be a useful supplier, you know, out in the 2030s. It's hard to talk about Colombia or any other supplier country in the world, really, without talking about India. And I think with Colombia rising in importance in the last 4 or 5 years as a coke producer, and Ranjana here founded our FOB Barranquilla coke number out of Colombia, and that which has been, I think, quite popular in the market. Colombia has risen in importance, and India has been a destination for that coke, among others. And India really is the clearing point for global coke. India's regulatory regime around coke imports has been evolving rapidly. Last year, we saw
quantitative restrictions, which were imposed
for the second half of last year, basically founded around the issue that Indian coke producers were suffering because they were being undercut. That's been evolving. Ranjana, you would tell us, it's obviously changed since the 1st of January. Do you want to give us
the Indian government has done a lot of U-turns as far as QR is concerned, and now they had ADD, and the latest is that they have said that importers can bring as much as low ash met coke as long as they pay the duties. So it's all about duties now. And guess what? The country which is going to pay the highest duty is China. So obviously, I would say that as far as Colombians are concerned, if they can manage the freight, then the duties are relatively okay for them. And it's one country which is growing. And recently, what I've seen is that there have been talks by many importers in India where they are keen to get Colombian material, but the Colombians, on the other hand, they want to put a ship together, look at the right price, and maybe look at some stock and sale opportunities. So we do see that emerging.
I think one thing I just highlight is we're in the process of putting together an arbitrage calculator, which will appear in our Met Coal Weekly for clients in the audience, which compares the various source countries delivered into India, including the different anti-dumping duty for each country. And there were 6 different ones, and they vary from, I think Japan's the lowest at about $60 a ton, all the way up to China at, I think, a little over $130. So yeah, it'd be very interesting to see how that evolves. Destinations are important, and those are also evolving. Ranjana, I know you talk to the Colombians a lot. Tell us about diversification of destination markets for Indonesia. It's an important theme, obviously.
Yeah, and recently what we have seen, I mean, in the past few years, there has been some concerted efforts by Colombian producers to actually send more material towards Asia if the freight works out and if the opportunities, if they can put a vessel together. But, I mean, as far as the top destinations for Colombian exports, they are the traditional markets in the Atlantic, like Turkey, Brazil, and, you know, some of the nearby countries. But obviously, as far as the material like ULP is concerned, so for ULP coke, which is ultra-low phos coke of 0.006 to 0.008%, the biggest market is India at the moment, because the ferroalloys, they need it, or some of it goes to some of it stays in the Latin American markets as well. So, the exports market. But I would like to throw some interesting data over here. As far as Colombian exports are concerned, it was a very tough year last year. We saw that exports of met coke, nut coke, breeze coke combined together just stood at 3.26 million tons, which is nearly 20% down from 4 million tons in 2024. So it's been a tough year, but this year we have seen with coking coal prices rising and met coke also seeing a slight increase, things could improve.
I think it's worth noting one of our core research themes is a declining US dollar. And, you know, there are question marks around fundamentals for many commodities right now, many sort of a bit oversupplied still. And obviously 2025 was a bit of a struggle, particularly for thermal and met coal markets. But with a declining US dollar, that will push prices higher. We've already seen, you know, huge runs on precious metals and copper and a few other things. And, you know, I think that will be supportive to US demarcated price at least. And I think cost is critical. One of the issues we obviously, you know, I think Colombians have been struggling with is just not having margin. And when Ranjan and I were both in, we're in Cartagena last year, and then about 6 months ago, we're in Barranquilla for the Fenilcarbón conference. And an ongoing theme from the coke producers was reducing that the supply. So that 20% down, not a surprise. But cost pressures are an issue. And I think one of the core things in the market is you're going to need this coke. And you might not need it today, but from 2030 on, when we see these markets becoming structurally tight, you will need it. And so really, you know, we've seen costs rising in a lot of places, including in Colombia. But I think this is a sign that the market pricing needs to move higher to make sure that these guys are in the money.
Absolutely, James. Over here, cost pressures are a real thing for Colombian producers. So last year, the Colombian peso, it appreciated by 14%, which means the cost of production had risen. And we all know that cost of transportation in Colombia via trucking from one part of the country to the another is quite high. So added to the pressure of rising peso, cost of trucking, and then low prices. So the producers, I would say they had a real tough time. And as a result of it, a lot of coke ovens were shut down. They were completely shut. And the ones which were open, they were operating at 30-40%. But this year, yeah, things are looking up.
Colombian elections, that's obviously a huge
topic. Yes, I mean, I was going to ask you because you have been not only tracking Colombian elections, you have been looking at the global situation, plus you are closely involved with our journal house and looking at the global picture quite closely. So what is your view on the upcoming Colombian elections and what could be their likely impact on the industry? In fact, I would love to hear your view about the global situation as well, how you see it.
Colombian elections have been a big topic at our Cartagena conferences really for the last few years since the initial election of Petro. He has been, you know, pretty openly anti-coal. He's wanted to end, or he's made statements along the lines of ending coal production in Colombia, ending coal exports. It hasn't happened, first of all. So, you know, he hasn't acted against the coal industry hard enough to really push supply down. It has been pushed down by market forces and to a degree by, you know, mines' ability to produce and things like that. But clearly he was, you know, I don't think he was not the best friend of the coal industry. And I think they've been wanting some, you know, a friendlier leader, a more coal-friendly leader. Coal, obviously, a huge export revenue driver for Colombia. You know, similar to oil and well ahead of things like coffee, which coffee, I think, is their number three. There are a lot of candidates. I think there are about 100 candidates initially in the election, and the way the election works is in April they have a first round with every candidate who remains in the race, and then the top two have a runoff, which is in June. I think, you know, a lot will pivot on this, but I think they're probably, we're seeing even in the more left-wing candidates more of a pro-coal messaging. So I suspect we will have a more pro-coal government, more pro-coal, not necessarily pro-coal, but a more pro-coal government, regardless of who gets elected. But if it is a more right-wing person, then obviously that will, they'll help facilitate things like permitting and you know, everything involved in the mining process. But it things are up in the air, and we really won't get much of a read at least until April.
Yeah. And globally, James, what is your view about the global economic situation? I mean, we have, you know, activities in Iran which are going on, which create a lot of nervousness in the system. So how do you view the entire situation?
It's unique. I think, I don't think anyone's been through times like this even. And a lot of it, of course, you know, stems out of the US administration. You know, we had the Venezuela situation, and then shortly afterwards, it looked like there might be strikes on Iran. And then we were dealing with Greenland. I think all of the, and then Davos. I think all of these things add uncertainty. And, you know, I think one of the big themes of 2025 was uncertainty. And when businesses are uncertain, they don't spend money, they hoard cash. So that still hurts. We are seeing some confidence indicators improving. So some of the surveys that, you know, like the St. Louis Fed, things like the copper gold ratio and stuff have improved somewhat, but there's still a lot of uncertainty in the world. We have a stock market that's soaring, but interestingly, some of that's just the weakening US dollar, like we talked about before. I think I might be misquoting, but I'm pretty sure yesterday I was reading that the Dow was up 14% last year in US dollars, but flat in euros. So there's definitely a currency story here. I think to some degree, the strength in metals is people shorting the US dollar. It's a way to short the US dollar is to go long commodities, right? So yeah, obviously there are risks around, you know, stock markets and so forth, which is a little out of my core expertise, but there are certainly, you know, I think there's still a lot of uncertainty in the world, and uncertainty drives conservatism, business conservatism.
Yes. You have started doing forecasting of coke, and you know it has been looked at by everyone, including our latest coke plant database, which has become so popular. I mean, I had like at least hundreds of customer queries for that database. So, but I wanted to hear your views about our coke forecasting, and how do you see that? If you could give us some numbers over here.
Coke is tied to coke and coal. And we've seen a big run in coking coal lately. We've gone from 168 for PLV mid last year. We were hovering around 190 for a lot of the second half of last year. And lately we've been up around 250. So it's been a huge, you know, more than 20% rise in the market. I think that's mostly been a function of initially tight spot availability out of Australia. And then we had Cyclone Koji. We had a roof fall at Dendrobium. Those have really moved coking coal prices, but not moved coke nearly as much. And they haven't moved, for example, Chinese coking coal prices higher. So I think that's probably a temporary upside. And as these kind of, you know, mines that are dealing with water issues and so forth come back, and some old mines return to the market and some new ones ramping up, that will push coking coal prices downward. 250, no Indonesian coke producer is going to buy Australian coking coal at $250, for example. So, you know, arbitrage for buying that is closed. And that would suggest either coking coal falls or coke rises. Beyond that, we do see most of the coking coal prices and coke prices probably steady in the second half of this year. But beyond that, steadily rising. You know, I think there's been oversupply in the market. There's certainly a risk of oversupply on the coking coal side with the return of quite a few mines. But we make the point they're not going to be running at capacities that they used to run at initially. They're not going to be, therefore, as low cost as they used to be. So it's not like these producers can necessarily take these new tons and just offer them down below, you know, marginal cost and still make money. So, but I think, you know, we're past the worst. I think it's important. And I think 2026 will be better than 2025 was, which is excellent news for Colombian coke producers and coke and coal producers. It'll probably be not too much upside initially owing to sort of plentiful or at least, you know, more than adequate supply. But certainly into 27 and probably second half of next year, I think prices steadily rise.
I think we have come to the end of our podcast now. We have, so we would like to end by saying that we are looking forward to all our listeners and contacts and everyone from the industry to join us in Cartagena from 10th to 12th of March. And on these dates, we have planned some very exciting sessions on steel, coke, anthracite, thermal coal, and you will get an opportunity to meet all the leaders over there. So don't miss the date, and please register as soon as possible because spaces are running out very, very quickly. This year, we have been very lucky that our registrations have picked up very quickly because I think people can to see the markets improving a little bit.
It's obviously a time where getting information is more critical than ever. So I think companies really do value getting together. I echo what Ranjana said. You know, been great to have everyone listening and look forward to seeing many of you in Cartagena. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
We hope you've enjoyed today's insider conversation on Opus Talks. Join us next time for a deep dive into another industry insider's world. You can find more Opus Talks episodes at opusnet.com/podcasts or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.